It is a Friday night post-trade deadline edition of Lamenting the Leafs. I'm Cam with Nick and Keith, and it wasn't a terribly eventful deadline for the Leafs, fellas, especially on the day of. Most of the work getting done beforehand. So just to recap before we get into it here, of course, last week, Ilya Lyubushkin coming in from Anaheim for a 2025 third and a sixth round pick this year on 75% salary retention. You got Joel Edmundson coming in on the blue line as well for a third this year and a fifth next. He's half retained. And you got Connor Dewar coming in for a 2024 fourth round pick and Dmitry Ovchinnikov. And then you've also got a small deal with Cade Weber, an unsigned college player, coming in for a 2026 sixth round pick. So that's a minor one there. But I mean, for my part, like I guess I just kind of feel like the Leafs, you know, moved out five picks, and they didn't really address their big needs, and I definitely don't feel like they're that much better off than they were, you know, a week ago. Like, you got someone to play with Mo, you got a penalty killer in Dewar, otherwise no forward help. You didn't add a defenseman higher in the lineup, which is what we've been dying for. Overall, not terribly impressed. Nick, how are you feeling about it here in the immediate aftermath?
Well, I mean, when you get your hopes up heading into the trade deadline, you're looking for that big addition. The guy that we've been talking about all season long is a defenseman to kind of slot everyone a little bit lower. Like you said, they didn't get that. When you kind of put it up against last year's deadline, where it seemed like a lot of different needs were addressed, mind you, for a lot more capital going out the door as well, it is a little bit underwhelming. But I think if you zoom out and we all let this breathe a little bit, I think the fact that Treliving didn't kind of go overboard with spending premium assets on rentals or just short-term help, you know, that's something that we also talked about all season long. We didn't want to be using those premium assets, high-end picks or top prospects just for rentals. You know, I think they did address a couple of needs on the roster, but as you said, Cam, just not really any of the real big holes that needed to be filled. You know, you're talking a bona fide middle six center that can kill penalties and drive offense a little bit. Dewar should help out on the penalty kill. Mind you, he is coming from the Minnesota Wild's 29th ranked penalty kill. So, you know, going to reserve judgment there a little bit, but he looks like a player who should help out the Leafs in that regard, at least a little bit. Edmundson and Lyubushkin will also help out there. And, you know, it's kind of been a talking point lately with the penalty kill that the Leafs are the only team currently in a playoff position with the penalty kill ranked in the 20s, I believe. So they're kind of an outlier there. Yeah, just nothing to get too excited about, but in the end, I think for, you know, what they spent, they addressed a couple of smaller needs. And as Treliving said at the end of the day today, it's going to come down to the core pieces of this roster more than anything anyway. So, yeah, I don't know how you felt about all of it, Keith, but that's kind of where I stand.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty neutral. Like, I would probably be a little bit more upset if I saw a bunch of players move today that I thought made sense for the Leafs or like were possible for the Leafs, but I'm not really sure that was there. Apart from Tanev, there's not really a deal that happened that I'm like, oh shit, that would have been nice. Like, it would have been nice to have Jake Guentzel, of course, but that's not going to happen.
Well, let me ask you this though. I'll ask both of you, like, with what we know now, would you have preferred to have just, you know, ponied up that first rounder to get Chris Tanev into Toronto rather than, you know, dealing out a handful of less valuable picks for less valuable players?
No, I wouldn't. There's risk that comes with getting a guy like Tanev. Like, oh, yeah. He has not really been able to be, you know, a reliably healthy guy throughout his time in the league. He's not getting any younger. He's 34 years old. I don't know. If he came with but that's the thing, is even an extension with him doesn't necessarily make me super pumped. He's 34. He'll be 35 next year. Like, yeah. I don't know. I would probably lean towards not doing that.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's like, I didn't want to do
either one, you know. I think, you know, if it's one or the other, like, I probably would have paid up for the premium asset, because it just kind of feels like, you know, Tree Living missed out on Tanev, and then he's left with like a vein throbbing out of his temple, and he needs to spend that somewhere, so he settles on Joel Edmondson, right? Like, it doesn't feel like it was, you know, a situation where they kind of said, well, we're content to kind of sit back and let this play out. It, you know, they still made moves. They still shipped out picks. And I just don't think that they got, you know, the return you want to get on it. And I think it's a good point that, you know, there weren't a lot of moves that you look at and you say, well, I wish the Leafs would have done that. So that's the other thing, right? Like, but I think that, you know, the situation I would have liked was, you know, sit back, do, you know, maybe do the Doer deal or, you know, Lyubushkin I'm fine with. I feel like, especially when you're talking about draft picks, right? Like, you can move the first round pick. It's got the prestige, you know, but it's going to be a late, you know, late 20s. You can move that out, and you've got all these other picks left. Maybe you don't feel the need to ship so many of those out. You know, you have to look at the fact that, you know, this is a scouting staff that has managed to turn the 28th, 38th, and 57th overall pick in, you know, their past three drafts into assets that they're saying at this year's deadline, we're not moving these guys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So obviously, yeah, you can do more with the first round pick than with those, but you can still do some damage with those later picks. And I know they didn't move out any seconds or anything like that. Not that they had them to move, but I guess I was just left feeling like, you know, Tree Living felt that he missed the boat, felt a little left out of the action, and, you know, needed to do something because, yeah, I mean, let's talk about Joel Edmondson a little, because,
well, that's what I was going to say, is I'm not sure what I would have preferred either in terms of offering up the first for Tanev. But the one thing that stands out to me with what's gone on, and when you kind of contrast it with not getting a player like Tanev, there was a direct fit or like an obvious hole for him in this lineup. And I'm not sure exactly where that spot is for Joel Edmondson.
The only thing I just want to say on the first and the picks and stuff, like, I think you got to be looking at the next 4 years that you have Auston Matthews. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
And I don't think anybody, even the late first, definitely not thirds and fifths and sixth, are contributing meaningfully in the Auston Matthews window. And maybe he's here past that, and that's hopefully the case. But right now, you know, you got him for 4 years. So I don't think trading the first, like, I guess what I'm trying to say is I still want to trade the first, but if there's nobody available with term on it and that isn't 34 years old with that has been put a lot of heavy miles on his body, wait till the draft. Like,
that's the other thing, is they still have, they've preserved their ammunition heading into the offseason. If there was no way for them to address that glaring hole on the right side of the defense in any meaningful way ahead of this deadline, at least Tree Living and the rest of the management staff did kind of preserve some ammunition heading into the offseason, you know, to give themselves another opportunity to address that.
You know, if an Adam Larson or even a Parayko or somebody like that had been moved this year for a first and some prospects, I'd have been a lot more upset. But that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I just don't think there didn't seem to be anybody available that, apart from Tanev, and I'm not sure he was the guy for me anyway.
Yeah, I wasn't terribly envious of a lot of what was going on. And I guess that, like, you know, you've both kind of touched on it. Like, the bright side is the positive way to look at it, where I'm a little bit underwhelmed with what happened, is like the way that this was going, I fully expected at least one of Robertson or Liljegren to go out for a completely underwhelming return today. So I guess that's the thing to cling to. And
or Minton.
Yeah,
it could have been a lot worse. Like, let's underline that fact a little bit. Like, we're all a little bit underwhelmed here, but it definitely could have been worse with spending premium assets on things that weren't going to, you know, move the needle for this team in any significant way or be part of the club moving forward.
I guess I just like to be so much as whelmed even once by a Brad Tree Living move, because, yeah, almost a year into the tenor and I'm not digging the vibe so far. But yeah, I mean, let's talk about some of the individual stuff, because, like I said, you know, Lyubushkin, you know, he fits a role, you know, you were going to end up getting a guy who's not probably a traditional first pair guy to play with Riley. That's likely how it was going to go.
And that's something we've talked about on this show throughout the year too, right?
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, you wanted to get a guy who's going to do what Shen did. And, you know, if Lyubushkin can give you a fraction of that, that's, you know, that you're happy with that.
And so far, so good.
And he's been solid. You know, he was solid in his first go round, and he's been solid in these first few games. And that's what you want. It's the head scratcher for me is turning around and getting Edmondson at a similar price, where he's a guy who is not going to, you know, slot in on any kind of top four situation. I would think, and if he does, you're dealing with much bigger issues, I would assume. Like you said, Nick, he's going to help on the penalty kill. He's a big body. You know, you go out there on the playoff ice, and there's going to be situations where their guys got to get through your guys to get to the net, and he's going to be good there, right? Like, that's, there's no doubt about that. But I just feel like, you know, of all the Leafs teams over the last few years, this might be the blue line that's least suited to be like, okay, we've got the puck moving, let's get the beef. And that's feels like what they kind of did here.
That's just kind of it for me, is like, all season long, all we've heard about is that this blue line is not good enough to carry this team on a deep playoff run. And I just don't think that's changed.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think that, you know, you added to your glut of you know, third pair guys who, you know, can fill a role, but like, they can't all fill the same role, and there's other roles that need to be filled, you know?
And I think what it does mean is that I don't think we're very likely to see Timothy Liljegren in the playoffs as it stands right now. Things could change, but, you know, specifically against a team like Boston or Florida.
Well, I mean, these last two games against Boston have been it's been bad.
He's had flashes this year where he's looked all right.
Decent little stretch while Riley was suspended.
Yeah, but not as many stretches as previous years. And
the Brody Liljegren pair looked like, you know, while Riley was out, looked like a pair that could make you comfortable going into the playoffs. Brody looking a lot better on his offside, and that's kind of when Liljegren looked the best. But
it's a strange thing because, like, the Leafs had multiple problems on their blue line, right? Like, yes, the penalty kill was a big issue. They didn't have enough guys who were able to kill plays. That's where Lyubushkin and Edmondson will presumably help out. But they've also really struggled to move the puck out of their own zone. So it's a weird kind of situation where, you know, that's something that Timothy Liljegren is, you know, that's probably one of the strengths of his game. I wouldn't say he's a high-end puck mover by any means, especially dealing with exceptionally heavy forechecking teams, as we've seen in the past. It just seems like there's a lot of guys who are like, they have one trait that's kind of a defining thing for them, and then the rest of their game isn't kind of well-rounded enough to be trusted in any more than that singular role, if that makes any kind of sense.
Yeah, D-zone coverage or breaking up a cycle.
Like, Liljegren can snap a pass around, but you don't really feel good about him out there against, yeah, stopping a cycle or defending against another team's top line. He's not a great penalty killer. Yeah, Edmondson and Lyubushkin are going to be able to stand guys up at the blue line, clear the front of the net, all that stuff. But when the puck's on their stick, you don't really feel all that great about it either. So it's just kind of a lot of imperfect pieces on the back end, I think.
If it were like a basketball game where you could just kind of call a timeout and sub someone in for a situation and then sub them right back out, they'd have a fucking golden blue line.
Project 6-9.
And the other, you know, thing on Edmondson for me is, like, obviously a big part of what you brought him in for is that lumber baby. He's gonna fucking lay it in the playoffs. And the thing there, though, is like the diminishing returns on, like, the guy who gets away with everything in the playoffs when they're on the Leafs, right? Like, like, Morgan Riley just got 5 games for cross-checking a guy who is facing him in a situation where the head of player safety himself would have literally gutted the guy like a fish and hung him from the fucking rafters if he were playing. And then meanwhile, in Calgary, you've got Martin Pospisil going out trying to put guys in a fucking iron lung, and he gets 3 games. Like, the spotlight is different. Guys don't get away with stuff like they get away with stuff in other markets. And I just have a hard time not seeing Joel Edmondson taking, you know, 6 penalty minutes a game in the playoffs.
Yeah, he's not going to help the penalty kill out much if that's the case.
I have a hard time seeing him getting through the playoffs without a suspension or at least a fine. You know, it seems like whenever the Leafs kind of engage in that kind of stuff, you know, it's been talked about before, but it seems to be cracked down on a little quicker.
We'll have plenty of time to get upset about that later.
maybe, you know, the osmosis effect, like, you know, sometimes you have a young scorer and then you call up another guy and that guy's feeling the pressure and all of a sudden he's, you know, skating a little faster, a little harder, his shots are a little sharper. You go and you get Joel Edmondson and all of a sudden against the Bruins, everyone's working the sticks. It's like, I got to show that I can throw a cross check if I'm going to stay in this lineup.
Oh, Jake McCabe got a bit of a head start. We'll get to that later, though.
Yeah. Speaking of Jake McCabe, just shout out Jake McCabe. Obviously, cross-checking Marchand in the mouth, but he's having a great year. He's getting buried in the D-zone. His numbers look good. He's just been a great get all around.
I think we were all kind of longing for a similar type of deal to the
right-handed
one.
Right-handed Jake McCabe.
Yeah, right-handed Jake McCabe or something of that nature. You know, like, yeah, that was a costly deal to make last year, but you got him at a great number on the cap and you've got him beyond just that singular playoff run. You know, we have him next year as well. So I think, you know, a lot of fans, myself included, probably had their hopes up for a similar kind of deal this year to address the right side. And, you know, when that doesn't happen and you've got to settle for guys like Labushkin and Edmondson, it is going to feel a little bit underwhelming, even if they do address some sort of need.
Yeah. And I don't know how much more we need to get into like the specifics of the deal. You know, it's the definition of depth moves, right? Like, you know, I guess that the kind of one note we haven't touched on, obviously you get all this salary retention, you have to pay extra to get it on these guys who are not making that much and they're third pair guys. And it just kind of sits with me funny a little bit because it's like, you know, 75% retention. You know, we got this guy for less than the minimum salary, and the guy is Ilya Labushkin. You know, it's like it keeps bringing to mind that I don't know if you guys know that tweet about Little Caesars. Little Caesars, it's hot and it's ready. Is it good? It's hot and it's ready.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So I mean, it does feel like those salary clearing moves were made with maybe the anticipation of something else, and obviously it was tight either way, so it's not like it hurts you, but I just thought that was a little odd.
But you know, I think we should point out the fact that the Leafs did have the flexibility to clear a little bit more room on the salary cap should something bigger come available, which obviously, you know, it didn't, or at least nothing that was to Treliving's liking in terms of the outgoing assets. But yeah, they did have additional flexibility if they found something that worked for them that would have been a bigger addition. Just didn't come to pass.
So I mean, all of this is against the backdrop, obviously, of two tough losses against Boston. And I mean, I think that the Leafs have looked really good lately. Obviously, they had a very nice winning streak going that ended against Vegas. And, you know, you're 3-3 since then. But you got a couple of tough losses against the team that you're probably going to end up matching up against in the first round, the team that has kind of haunted you for upwards of a decade now. So that's generally not going to be great for the psyche of the fan base and maybe even of the people around the team going into the trade deadline. But I guess, yeah, that's another kind of credit, I suppose, if you're looking for the silver linings, is like that these two tough losses to Boston didn't necessarily send them into a panic, because I think that, you know, at some point you kind of have to rely on the guys that you brought in to do the job. It's like, obviously, trade deadline, you're trying to build for the playoffs. Well, you were doing that in the summer when you brought in Tyler Bertuzzi and Max Domi. Like, you want those guys to be playoff performers, and obviously, you know, part of the calculus here is that they're going to step up a bit, and I mean, at the very least, you know, the attitude is there.
Yeah, that was nice to see for a change. You know, obviously the game didn't go, neither game went the way that the Leafs would have liked, but I think there is at least a little something to take out of the one on Thursday night. And in general, I didn't really think that they were all that bad, to be honest with you. Like the horrific turnover by Nylander at the top of the offensive zone, it's just something that can't happen. But as they alluded to
on the three,
yeah, the 5-on-3 is a tough one, but not going to kill McCabe for kind of trying to set the tone there early on.
No.
And, you know, then there's the floater that goes by Joseph Woll. Obviously, not a perfect game by any means. You'd like a lot more out of your best players. Don't know how much the flu bug that's going through the team had to play into that. But The one thing that I am taking from Thursday night's game is at least the Leafs showed that bite and that snot that we've heard so much about, right? Like it started early on with McCabe taking a shot at Jake DeBrusk, and then just the one on Marchand was just hilarious to me. It was like, it was already over. McCabe knew he was already getting a penalty and he didn't care. He wanted to take a bite at a Marchand, and I'm never going to get upset about that. Obviously the outcome wasn't great, but it kind of just carried on from there. I don't know how you guys felt about the collision between Knies and Marchand. I think it was maybe a little bit accidentally on purpose. Hard
100%.
Hard to really say with any conviction that it was intentional, but the fact remained that, you know, the Leafs lost an important part of their lineup for the remainder of that game, at least because of a collision with Marchand. And Max Domi, you know, he wanted his pound of flesh for that. He went after Marchand in the third period. Marchand wouldn't oblige. He wouldn't take no for an answer from Charlie McAvoy shortly thereafter. And then you had Tyler Bertuzzi absolutely feeding Parker Witherspoon in the second period, which I thought really kind of flipped the game in the Leafs' favor, momentum-wise, at least at that point, before John Tavares took an offensive zone penalty and things sort of unraveled from there. But I just thought it was really nice to see the Leafs kind of not only match that physical intensity, but they initiated a lot of it for a change. And you can quibble over how much that matters or doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things, but I'm of the belief that it matters quite a bit, especially when you get to the postseason and you're playing against a team like the Bruins, who has kind of punked you in that regard in past years. So yeah, you would have liked to get at least 2 points out of those two games against Boston, kind of keep even pace, give yourself a shot to pull even with them or pull ahead for home ice advantage. But yeah, I think there were some positives to take out of it.
Kind of main takeaways I had from it is in the past few years, it hasn't been like the Leafs haven't had guys that can play physical and fight, muck it up in scrums and stuff like that. But I didn't feel like a lot of it was the Leafs on the offensive. And it was more teams starting shit. And
it wasn't a lot of guys up the lineup either. It was usually...
No, definitely not that. Yeah. So having guys in the top six, middle six, that not only will answer, but will start shit, I think is important. Like, I think setting the tone, like you said, it's not so much just like, oh, somebody took a run at us and now we have to defend ourselves. I'm going to be the guy that buries you with a cross check. Like, I haven't seen a lot of that maybe since Kyle Clifford boarded whoever it was in game one and got suspended. Like, I don't, and again, that's a fourth line guy. So yeah, that was a big thing. And the other thing is they got like penalty kill is going to make or break them in the playoffs. Like, I think generally speaking at 5-on-5, they've been all right this year. They maybe haven't been as good as they've been in years past, but it's, you know, it really has been a tale of two teams a lot this year. They've looked amazing and they've looked pretty bad, but I think generally speaking, they're probably going to be okay at 5-on-5. Guys tend to step up in the playoffs a little bit. That I'm not as worried about. But in the power play, we've seen it go extremely cold. You know, I think it was Sammy McKee who said, as the weather gets warmer, it gets colder. Same thing. Those two, it's special teams for me. Like, I left that game being like, yeah, we can hang with them. Like, I didn't see anything that made me feel like there was this, you know, crazy gap between the two teams. I just think obviously you can't go down 5-on-3 with a team with Pasternak. Like, he's gonna score, but that's not gonna happen that often, right? Like, flush that one out. But,
and really, it probably shouldn't have happened at all.
No, there was clearly not Knies taking that penalty. And what's crazier is the exact same thing happens in the game. Like, how often does a guy get two cross-checking penalties in one play, and it happens twice in a game, and they get it wrong for the Leafs, obviously. But anyways, that's where I'm at. The penalty, like, the power play is going to have to be the difference, I think, in that series, and the penalty kill just can't sink them.
Yeah, obviously you bring in Connor Dewar. Hopefully he'll you know, contribute something there, but like, that's probably going to be a guy who's in and out of the lineup. You know, who knows, just kind of gives you a different look. But
also the Dewar deal just highlights how big of a disaster the camp signing was.
Yeah. That's what stood out to me right away. It's like,
you can get guys to do that for $700,000.
Yeah. And we already had one in Pontus Holmberg, and you know, you go out and you get another guy who's younger than David Kampf and under team control as an RFA. You're absolutely right, Keith. It does underscore just how needless that contract was for Kampf in the offseason. And he really hasn't, you know, done much to earn anywhere close to that value.
He's played season. Like a league minimum player.
Yeah.
Like he hasn't given you anything else.
No.
Yeah. I didn't see a lot of Thursday night's game, but I mean, I felt similarly about Monday's game. You know, obviously the final score isn't great, but you know, from what I saw a lot of back and forth, a few breakdowns that end up in the back of your net, like some bad bounces for the Leafs. But you know, like they're competing in these games and they're, you know, the scores aren't maybe indicative of how they've looked, but and then, you know, you look at the rest of it, you know, you got to look big picture because they've been very good of late. So yeah, I mean, I guess I'm still kind of iffy about their chances, and you know, I didn't necessarily want to see them go all in by any means, but
well, you saying that, Cam, just kind of brought something to mind for me. Is like, that's been the case in a lot of the Leafs losses this year where, you know, they've been mostly solid or been the better team for large portions of those games. And it's like that one or two glaring errors or glaring breakdowns.
Self-enforced errors too.
Yeah. A lot of self-inflicted wounds that have cost them points. I do wonder about, you know, guys like Lyubushkin and Edmondson who are, you know, kind of, they've been around the block a little bit. They know what they are. They aren't going to be guys who are trying to do too much. I wonder if that was part of the calculus in bringing those guys in, to just kind of, you know, bring back that old Mike Babcock expression, steady on the rudder sort of deal. You know, Edmondson is a guy who's battle tested in the postseason. He's won a cup. He's been on multiple deep runs. So I think there is value there for sure. It's just a matter of how well that value is going to translate to the on ice product.
You guys want to remember a Leaf?
I'm scared this week, to be honest with you.
You guys remember Jyrki Lume?
Hell yeah. Former Canuck?
Yeah. He was.
Is that where we got him from?
No.
He bounced around a bit.
Yeah. So he was in Vancouver. That was his longest stop through most of the 90s, and started in Montreal, Vancouver, Phoenix, Dallas, shortstop in Dallas, and then it was to Toronto. And I looked him up just because I was like, get a, you know, trade deadline deal. And the thing I learned was that he was not a trade deadline acquisition. It was a November trade. For some reason, I was convinced it was a deadline deal, but clearly did not work out in Dallas. 15 games after he went there, and then it was off to Toronto, where it also did not work out terribly well. He was a real whipping boy, man.
Something about those Finns, eh? Aki Berg, Jyrki Lume.
Yeah, it was a bad run there.
Yeah.
Early 2000s.
Who would have thought that the guy that you brought in after a 15-game audition at another spot at age 35 wasn't going to maybe be the answer?
Then he went to Liga after that and just gooned it up. 118 penalty minutes in 45 games.
Hell yeah.
Oh, wow.
Should have seen some of that in Toronto. We would have turned around the perception real quick.
Do you have it there in front of you, Cam, what the obviously a much different time, much different climate and all that, but do you have in front of you what the Leafs paid to bring in Lume?
I think it was just
at the time
player. It was not even a, I think it was Dave Manson.
Okay.
I mean, it was Dave Manson, who at that point must have been,
he was definitely up there at that point, but he was a serviceable,
yeah, he was around the same age, yeah,
serviceable defender in his day as well.
All right, well, another trade deadline in the books.
Not quite the same flair for the dramatic as last season's deadline, but you know, it just kind of comes back to the fact that they weren't going to bring in anyone that was going to influence their outcome in the postseason more than the guys that are already in place here. The core of this team is going to be, or are going to have to be, the ones that get it done and finally flip this narrative. And you just have to hope that this is the year, man.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, years past, they've loaded up and it didn't go anywhere. So maybe this is the opposite. But I think it just comes down to, for me, like, I'm glad they didn't trade their first for Sean Walker or something of that, right? Like, if it was a way to pry one of those Seattle D-men away, or like Parayko, whatever. I'm even not even sold on that, but I could have talked myself into that pretty quickly. Like, guy with term, I think, was the only way that I was going to feel comfortable parting with the first. And I still think that's the play in the summer. But yeah, nobody changed hands today that you know, upset me too much.
Yeah, I think it's okay to be underwhelmed, but also glad that the Leafs didn't.
Understanding too.
Yeah.
Like it's, yeah.
Yeah, they didn't overextend themselves. They didn't really, you know, go above and beyond to pay in a crazy price for someone that wasn't, you know, of commensurate value, right? So, like, again, it could have been worse. It could have been a lot better, but, you know, this is what we've got.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not thrilled with it, but it's hockey, baby, you know? It's the only sport where you can cross-check someone in the mouth and completely change the game. So anything can happen. And we have got some good mouth cross-checkers now.
Some of the best.
Far and away, the meanest Leafs team in the Core 4 era. It's not even close.